That song is A Flock of Seagulls, Iran. That band, a couple of guys started a band in a garage, sort of, in Liverpool. Why does that story sound kind of familiar? This was a huge hit back in 1982. You couldn't go anywhere in the world without hearing it, supposedly inspired by an alien abduction scenario. And that's sort of what inspired our next guest to get involved in investigating paranormal and UFO stuff. Preston Dennett started in 1986. When he found out that his family, friends, and co-workers were having these dramatic incidents and encounters with the unknown. Since then, he's interviewed hundreds of witnesses, has investigated a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He's a ghost hunter, paranormal researcher, and the author of 15 books on UFOs and the paranormal. And one of the topics of interest of late for him is UFOs that are USOs, underwater UFOs. When we come back, we'll jump into that and also talk about some of his book series. So much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Welcome back to the program, and welcome my next guest, Preston Dennett. Preston, it's been a while since you've been on the show. I've been reading your stuff for a long time, and I was hoping that our paths would cross at some point. I'm glad you're here.
Oh, thanks. It's great to be back. Yeah, I'm super excited.
The bio info that was sent to us said that you got drawn to these topics because you started hearing stories from friends and family members. What kind of stories? What were you hearing?
I was really surprised. My brother told me about how he chased a UFO across the San Fernando Valley here in Southern California with his two friends. My sister-in-law told me about how she saw apparently two gray-type ETs. This is in front of Stagg Street Elementary School late at night in Van Nuys. And yeah, one by one, people I knew had known for a long time were telling me this stuff because I'd seen this report on the news about this sighting over Alaska. And had the idea to start asking people what they thought of this ridiculous pilot. We thought he saw a UFO. And so,
Oh,
yeah,
is
we
that the
found
JAL incident? Japan
exactly.
Airlines?
Exactly, yeah. It was on the news. It was all tongue in cheek. I didn't believe it for a second. But, I believe it now, let me tell you. For sure, yeah, because my family, I found out we're having all these encounters, my friends, my coworkers. And I have to tell you, Georgia, it was not good news. It hit me like a ton of bricks. It caused me to reevaluate everything and really got me involved in the subject in a big way.
Well, I can relate to that. I mean, when the realization comes over you at some point, this is not just a story. This could be real. It's very unsettling.
Yeah, I felt scandalized, honestly. I'm like, this was not taught in schools. I'm like, what is going on? Is the Earth being invaded by aliens and no one's talking about it? I mean, I could not believe it.
That example you're using, JAL, Japan Airlines flight, is a perfect example of the kind of stuff that the public is fed. That's a real case. That's a legitimate case. And the story as described, that UFO was kind of shaped like a walnut, bigger than an aircraft carrier. It was picked up on multiple radars, seen visually, and they tried to explain it away as the planet Jupiter. It was lights bouncing off the squid fleet. They threw every kind of excuse they could to embarrass that guy, and it was a real legitimate case.
Yeah, he ended up losing his job as a result, I believe. And when it was on the news, it was all very tongue in cheek, and they didn't mention any of these details about the onboard radar or the FAA radar, which they later called split images, and all of this. But yeah, it got me interested. And that was one of a few cases that always make the mainstream media each year, like the O'Hara Airport case or, the Mexican infrared footage of UFOs in Stevensville and things like this. And these cases keep coming up.
Well, you've dug up some pretty interesting cases yourself, and we're going to get into some of them. I mean, you cast a very wide net when you go into and cover a state, and you found a really cool niche, and we'll get to more of it in a minute, but after we talk about undersea UFOs. But the idea of going into a state, doing a comprehensive survey, looking for all the cases you can find, and then turning it into a book—that's a pretty cool idea for a series.
Right. Yeah, it started with UFOs over California, and being based here was kind of a natural progression, and kind of grew from there. I felt kind of compelled to do it because a lot of these reports are going to be lost to posterity, really, if we don't record them. They're from old newspaper reports and old books that are no longer available, and newspaper clippings and things like this. So there's a lot of information out there that could be lost if we don't do this.
Well, you also unite a whole bunch of UFO databases, like MUFON cases, Blue Book cases, New Fork, new different organizations that are far flung. It's hard for an individual person to find all that stuff, and you put it all in one easily digestible spot.
Right. Obviously not able to include all the cases. What I found is, I always ask people when I interviewed them, did you report your case officially in any way? I'm going to say about 1 in 100 people, literally, have done that. So any amounts of the, I'm going to say that any estimation of the amounts of encounters we're having in one state is vastly underestimated.
I remember when I started, the statistic, 90% of UFOs can be explained away. That's true, but it's also true that 90% are never reported at all.
Right, especially if it's a really good case. I mean, involving entities and things like this that are really, shake a witness up.
Exactly. Well, let's jump into USOs a little bit, and we'll come back to some of the cases over land and state by state that you've covered, including the latest book is UFOs Over Nevada. The USO stuff, how did you get involved in looking into undersea UFOs?
Well, it started almost immediately, really, when I began looking into this stuff. I began to get cases. I was situated pretty close to the coast there, right here in Southern California, off Los Angeles, and it turned out the Santa Monica Mountains there was something of a hot spot, and I couldn't quite figure it out why, but a number of these cases were coming, from the ocean area there. I remember a really early case was from this therapist, Linda Young. She's driving along with her friend, and she's looking out and sees this lighted object kind of on the water there, and it doesn't look like a boat, it's just this light. And as she's watching it, she points it out to her friend, and at that exact instant, it takes off straight up and disappears. Not a boat, not, she doesn't know what it was. And so, yeah, that's when it started. I started getting more and more of these types of things.
So give me the parameters of what constitutes a USO, how they're different from a UFO.
I think they're pretty much the same in terms of, what they actually are. But when we have a USO, an unidentified submersible object, we've got these objects moving in and out of the water in ways that there's nothing we have that can do that. So I don't think they're really any different technically from UFOs themselves, but they're doing things that we didn't know that they could do, and we weren't really paying too attention to before.
Well, in that sense, it's even more of a distinction than a UFO, because we've got a lot of different craft that can do some pretty amazing things and advanced stuff that can do beyond anything we can imagine, maybe. But when you've got a craft that can fly in and out of the water like that, we really don't have anything that comes close.
No, well, not officially, and then certainly there was cases going on pretty early on that were before we had any ability to do this. There was an early case on August 8, 1954, which came from a Japanese steamship, the Aliki, and they saw what they thought was a fireball coming down, hits the water, and in this case, it came out of the water and kept on going. So this is clearly not a fireball. I mean, this is some type of object, but going in and out of the water, and right here in this one area, mind you, I found out that. That was what started to tick me off that there was something really going on, is most of this activity is one particular area.
You mean in Southern California off the coast?
Right, the Santa Catalina Channel, starting from I'm going to say north of Santa Barbara, around there, all the way down south to Rancho, Palos Verdes, San Pedro, that far, containing Redondo Beach, Malibu, Topanga, Santa Monica, Venice, Hermosa Beach, all these areas. Which is basically the Santa Catalina Channel, all the way out to Catalina Island there.
When I first knew that I wanted to get you on to talk about undersea UFOs and possibility of bases, I was hoping you weren't going to be defending the Malibu thing because I thought that had been explained, the images of the Malibu site, but maybe you disagree. Do you think there's something to that one?
Well, that's something new that came on. I've been doing this research for quite a while, and I look at it and I'm not an expert on underwater geology or map reading or anything like that. It looks unusual, certainly, but I don't know. What I do know is that where it's reported is pretty much right in the dab center of where all this is going on. So I did find that kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting in that sense, but I think the explanation we had all read was that it was some sort of a computer glitch or anomaly in the images, that it's not really there. But I guess nobody's been down there to look, at least nobody that's admitting it.
Exactly. I mean, not officially. There's a lot of stuff going on in this area. I do know that.
All right, well,
And I'm
let's
pretty
talk
sure it's
about it.
not military.
What is going on? What is the evidence to how far back does it go? How many cases do you have? Describe sort of the depth and the breadth of the information that you've collected so far, in particular Catalina and that whole area.
Right. Well, I mean, the cases stretch back to, about 1947, the modern age of UFOs, when initially, there was this report of this underwater mass moving, in this case, in the Northern California area near this, San Francisco. And it got to be such a problem because ships can't navigate that they sent up this Navy ship to research it. And they were actually able to track it all the way down to Southern California and about 200 miles off the coast, and where they lost track of it. So this is the first report that I got. And
What's that information? Is that from Navy records, or you got press records of that?
that's
News?
from Harold Wilkins, I believe, is the source. An early researcher.
Right.
And so yeah, what I found is basically all the researchers in this area have uncovered cases of this type, and I mean pretty much everyone from Ann Druffel, Yvonne Smith, Barbara Lamb, Robert Stanley, Bill Hamilton. They've all already uncovered cases of this underwater USO activity. So I came in kind of late to the game, but well, I have to tell you, it is very active and has been going on since at least the 1940s. There's a lot of cases. One of my favorite, I'm going to say, occurred in around 1953 at Redondo Beach. And I like this case because it involves so many witnesses, including lifeguards, police officers from two neighboring counties, and a lot of citizens who all watched this object, which was described as around 20 feet in diameter, come swooping down, just lands there on the water there, just a few hundred yards offshore, slowly sinks down, lighting up the whole area, giving off all this foam and bubbles, and disappears. The Navy arrives, they send out divers there with radiation detectors, can't find anything. But it's a pretty amazing case and caused a press uproar. And the next day, the Coast Guard comes out with this explanation that it was a light buoy, and actually had the gall to show this little photograph of this small object about a foot in diameter that has a light on it. So it was a ridiculous explanation for, a pretty major sighting.
Did it get much press coverage, media coverage?
Yeah, it did. And that's, I think, why, there was they were forced to make an explanation. So it's probably one of the more famous cases, I think, in this area, at least, historically in the 50s.
What about Catalina itself out there? Now, I've saw the History Channel. I remember them doing Bill Burns and folks doing a show about something that might have been crashed in the water, might still be down there. Were you part of that?
That was part of, deep sea UFOs. There was an incident involving a plane that was actually flying over to Catalina and saw a UFO on the water, a USO, I guess you would call it, and it struck the plane with a beam of light. And apparently, one of the guys was abducted from the plane. The plane crashed, killing the other guy. And the plane crashed right there into the water there, and that's what we were looking for. We did not find it, but it was a pretty interesting case for sure. I mean, very unusual.
Are there other indications that Catalina is sort of the center of this stuff? I mean, are there a lot of activity there?
Yeah, there is. More than you would think. I keep finding cases. There was a case I found just recently at Parsons Beach, dating back to the 1950s, in which a group of Boy Scouts, 30 or 40 of them, saw this object with their scoutmaster. And I just had a more recent case, pretty much the same thing at the same area, which was, I'm telling you, like 20 June 26, 2014, just last year. A Boy Scout and his friends and saw a number of objects, not just one UFO, is the early case, but 20 or 30 of these objects. And that there's cases of abductions. There's, yeah, a lot of sightings in this exact area. I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but this is what I'm trying to figure out. I do think that there's a lot of evidence of a base, actually. That's what it's pointing towards.
I mean, just the sheer number of cases, things being coming in and out.
Well, in one case, it's not just the sheer number of cases, it's the amount of UFOs, because there was an incident in Topanga Canyon on June 14th, 1992, which I wrote a whole book about, around this one wave of sightings in which hundreds of UFOs were seen on one night. And I was able to locate one witness, or actually two witnesses, a couple who lived high up on the hill there. And they saw groups of these objects coming not from above, as you would normally see a UFO, but from below. And it was not just one or two objects. The wife started counting them, and at the end of the night, she said there was about 200 objects. And the husband's like, he disagreed. He says, no, I think it was closer to 100, which had to make me laugh, because either 100 or 200 UFOs, it's still way too many. This is a lot of objects. And this was not the only case I had of this large number of objects coming from, this ocean area. 2 years later, there was a lady, Judy, is her name, and she was actually able to photograph these objects coming in large groups from up the side of the ocean area here. So she was in Malibu.
What, no, wait, she's got photos of it like coming out of the water or floating above the water or what?
Floating above the water, but coming from that, the Catalina area, from the out to sea area, not from. But I do have more and more reports of these objects. If there's not a base under there, there's got to be some sort of huge parking lot of these things sitting down there, because they're coming out in large numbers. There's a case with investigated by Bill Hamilton in the 1980s involving not just one or two of these objects, but dozens of different sizes. And some were above the water, some were below the water at the same time, which is a feature I've seen up farther north as well. They're moving in tandem. I don't know what that means, but I think it's an interesting detail, that keeps turning up.
I guess you think about it. I mean, 70% of the planet is water. If you did have a base, or maybe it's not just a base, maybe they live there. It's not just a temporary housing facility kind of thing. Maybe that's where they're from. If you did have a base and didn't want humans to mess with you, it would make sense to be underwater and out of sight. I mean, because we have, underwater sensors, we have submarines and ships and things of that sort, but there's a heck of a lot of the planet that we've never seen.
Right. Well, and it's easy for them. So I think they can just go down there, and this is a place they can hide pretty easily and not be detected. I think that's one of the reasons, why we're finally seeing this stuff going on, is because we're looking down there, and we're finally getting to the technology to, and the awareness to look down at what's going on in our oceans there. And there's certainly a lot of activity in this one area.
Do you have any descriptions of how they move underwater, or people who've been underwater and see them go by?
There's not a lot of cases, of people being underwater and seeing them. There is one case of a lady scuba diving on the far side of Catalina Island, and she has an abduction experience,
Well, tell me that. Tell me that one.
which was, actually pretty interesting. It was originally investigated by Yvonne Smith, and this was a lady who had lifetimes of encounters and was on Catalina Island when scuba diving, when she felt, short of air, comes to the surface and sees this large UFO hovering above her. Next thing she knows, she's inside of it, having a not particularly pleasant encounter with gray-type ETs. She's, pretty much a young lady at the time, not very, just a teenager, not very old at all. So it was pretty traumatic for her. But I'm one of a number of cases of these abductions on Catalina Island. In her case, she was taken inside a UFO. But there's another case, which happened on the other side of the island, Avalon Harbor, actually, involving a young man who's now a doctor, but he was with his, at the time he was a kid, he was with his friend, and they had missing time on a boat in Avalon Harbor. And later he went under hypnosis, and under hypnosis he recalled not what most people recall, which is going aboard a UFO. He recalled going into an underground area, and he saw not gray-type ETs, but these praying mantis-type ETs. Said it was a very large cavernous area. His friend was apparently the target of the abduction. He didn't feel any fear at all. It was just a very kind of neutral experience for him.
We're talking with Preston Dennett about USOs. In a bit, we'll get into UFOs and some of the cases he's investigated. We're talking to Preston Dennett about underwater UFOs, some really interesting cases, and we'll continue that conversation and then take it over to land. He's got a new book out about UFOs over Nevada, another of UFOs over California, New York, New Mexico. A lot of stuff to cover here, much more to come on Coast to Coast. We're talking with Preston Dennett about underwater UFOs. You know what's coming to mind, Preston? I have the Abyss, the movie The Abyss in mind, of those sleek alien craft moving effortlessly through water. Do you have any theories, or does anybody else have theories about how they, what the propulsion is? I guess it could be the same thing that propels them through the air.
Well, the people who've seen the stuff say that it's silent. There was one really interesting case on July 28th, 1962, when the captain of this chartered fishing boat saw these lights floating, about 6 miles south of Catalina Island, and was, above the water, and he could see what appeared to be, a submarine. What he thought at first was a Russian submarine. He saw five men, two of them were in white clothes, and one was in a kind of a blue jumpsuit, and this submarine and starts turns towards them and tries to actually ram them, dives under the water and leaves no real big wave or anything, no swell, makes no sound. So it's not only acting strangely, it's moving strangely. And so he reports it to the Navy, who are unable to identify the sub as any type of German sub or, Japanese or Russian or anything. And this is when it got the attention of UFO researchers, particularly Jim and Cora Lorenzen, and who, feel that it was possibly a ET encounter.
I'm trying to remember if the famous case with the UFO hysteria over LA, where everybody was blasting away at the sky, right, in World War II, was that started by rumors of a Japanese submarine or something like that?
They thought it might be Japanese airplanes. It came in over the ocean right there, hovered over Culver City, particularly one very large object. We shot, over 1,500 rounds of ammunition at it, couldn't bring it down, and it moved back out to sea. So we don't know what it was. There are some reports that one of these objects was, in fact, shot down at that time, but I don't have a lot of information on that.
Do you happen to know, have you given a shot at getting any records out of the Navy? I ask in this context. 70% of the world is covered by water. We learned from the Bob Lazar case, and you and I will talk about that a little bit later when we get into UFOs over Nevada. But Lazar had said that out at Area 51 or S4, he was employed by the U.S. Navy. That was the branch of the military that was running the show when it comes to UFOs and recovered discs and things of that sort. And at the time, I was thinking, well, that doesn't make sense. It should be the Air Force, shouldn't it? But maybe not. Maybe it makes sense that the agency that would be the lead on this stuff would be the one that controls the oceans.
I've heard that. I've heard the Navy and other unusual places like that. I've had several people tell me that there's tunnels that lead from Area 51 to San Clemente Island to Edwards Air Force Base. San Clemente is, a military-owned island out beyond Catalina there. So, largely military-owned, I believe. And so I don't know. I've heard multiple reports of this, but it's very hard to say.
You ever file any FOIAs with the Navy to see what they've got on USOs?
No, not in any official capacity. I've had some military people contact me. There was one guy who was on a military ship. He said that went on lockdown when these lights appeared offshore, and were no one was able to identify them, and it, caused big uproar on the whole ship. And another guy who was a submarine navigator told me that yes, there is in fact a very deep trench that goes up and down the coast here from Monterey all the way down to the Santa Catalina Channel, and it's very deep and plenty of places for, USOs to hide.
Have you had many Navy veterans who would confide in you, tell you a story of something that they encountered in a sub or a ship or something that there's no record of that they would not want to talk about publicly?
Not a whole lot, just a few here and there. I've gotten certainly a lot of reports from a wide variety of people. There was one gentleman who had a underwater encounter in a small lake in Texas, when he was out with his friends, where this object came right up from under the lake, and they had missing time. It was a big deal. They were missing several hours. There was another case in Florida involving a gentleman who was out sailing with his wife, and saw these green beams of light under his boat. He's had submarines surface right next to his boat before. He's, you know, a longtime sailor. And that this wasn't anything like that. They were very powerful green beams of light. And they were coming from this object which came scooting out under the water, probably 100 feet down, and stopped right under his boat, clearly targeting him. He had no problems with any of his navigation or electrical equipment. But this object stayed underneath him, sending out these giant beams of green light for a couple of minutes there, and then finally just moved off. Very quickly, and not in a way that, you know, anything we have can do.
Any cases where there was hostile intent? You know, we've got cases from around the world where military warplanes encounter UFOs in the air, and some of them don't fare too well. They get knocked down, or they're incapacitated. Their equipment goes out. Anything like that from the reports that you've heard?
Well, not in this area. I mean, there was one case which occurred on February 5th, 1964, where, you know, 11 people had to be rescued by the Coast Guard because their boat struck something, something metallic. They don't know what it was. They were calling it an unidentified metal object. And
a UMO.
Right. This is in that same area, you know. So I don't know. Not a whole lot of hostile activity, no. I do get a lot of reports of people seeing objects coming out of the water or going in. Not as many of people seeing them going in and out. So that's kind of interesting. But no, nothing super hostile. There was one case where a guy was he's an electronics engineer. And this was in the 1980s, and he's sailing between Santa Barbara Island and Santa Cruz when he sees this light ahead of him and realizes it's actually underwater. And so he stops, and this light goes directly under his boat, and he's about 300 feet in diameter, he estimated. He has a 38-foot sailboat. And as it goes under him, his entire boat goes haywire. All the compasses, one actually broke off its mounting. His electronic system failed completely and really freaked him out pretty bad.
So you wrote about this, I think, for Fate magazine. I have not seen the article. Did you get much response to that? Did you suddenly start getting cases? People read the article and they start sending you their stories?
I did, yeah. You know, kind of snowballed. You know, it started out with a chapter in UFOs Over California about this underwater activity, and I adapted an article for Fate magazine because I kept getting these reports, and, you know, including these abductions of people taken to, you know, not UFOs but underground areas in this area. And I was connecting it all together, these large amounts of objects at once, you know, and abductees telling me that there was an underwater base in this area. So, you know, that it was kind of an article I put together for Fate magazine, which led to Deep Sea UFOs 1 and 2. And, yeah, that brought in a flood of reports that really hasn't stopped.
So is this a book in the works?
You know, it's going to have to be if I want to get all these reports out, for sure, because, you know, it's over 50, I'm estimating, of these underwater objects alone. And I'm not talking about ones, you know, above the water just flying around there, but, you know, actually going in or out or what have you.
Is there any connection, you know, sort of with UFOs? There's a lot of interest in whatever they are in our military bases, nuclear facilities, things like that. Is there a similar pattern with USOs, anything like that, or you don't have enough information to say whether there's a pattern or not?
Well, they like water. You know, it's certainly something that turns up again and again in upstate New York, you know, in UFOs Over New York. That's something that turned up over and over again, as UFOs were attracted to bodies of water, man-made reservoirs or small bodies of water. And this turns up, you know, all over the world. So I'm not exactly sure what that means, but, yeah, they're very interested in water.
I don't mean about water. I meant about nuclear bases, military bases, things of that sort. Any kind of connection there with USOs? Too early to tell.
Yeah, it's a little. There's Point Magoo Naval Base. It's not a nuclear base, I don't see a whole lot of connection there at this point. But certainly, we know UFOs are very interested in nuclear power. As evidence is the fact that they're hopping over nuclear power stations, you know, like Indian Head, New York, and Malmstrom, and all those. We know that.
Just seems to me like if I were a UFO, I'd want to be checking out nuclear-powered aircraft carriers, for example, or nuclear-powered submarines. I would think that there would be some incidents there that probably we haven't been told about.
That would make sense. I've got actually a couple of encounters with people. One was a guy who, you know, flew out looking for submarines, and an electronics engineer, and he had an incident outside in the, I believe it was the Philippines, or actually this was near the Bermuda Triangle, and he and his whole seven or dozen of his ship buddies were out on the deck there, and they saw these unexplained lights flashing on and off really powerfully, and he was able to estimate, you know, he's very adept in aircraft identification, and could see that these were about 30 miles off, very, very large, and not any aircraft that he's ever been able to identify. And he actually called the bridge, and they said, no, we don't see anything. There's nothing there. And even though, you know, they could all clearly see these lights, and we're looking at them through binoculars. So this is a really interesting story, because the next day, you know, he goes to bed, has this very unusual dream where he's in contact with these ETs, wakes up the next day and tells his friends about it, and they have no memory whatsoever of seeing this UFO at all. So they all had some sort of amnesia about the incident, and he's left with this very powerful sighting and his dream, in which he had contact with these ETs, were strung in the engine room, and different alternative sources of energy. And this was all on a Navy ship. This all encounter occurred right out there at sea.
I'll bet you there's some sonar records or some kinds of underwater surveillance systems and sensors that the Navy has planted out looking for bad guys, looking for enemy activity or potential threats, that have picked up unidentified things, just as NORAD and that kind of things have picked up unidentified objects. But it'll be an interesting project to file some FOIA requests. Maybe if you're going to work on a book project, could take a while to get the results, but somebody should try that. Maybe the guy that runs the Black Vault, John Greenwald. Anything along those lines?
I haven't researched that area yet, but I do know that in 2013, the Navy was doing sonar tests in this area and were challenged by environmental groups to stop doing it because it was damaging marine life. There was a big old lawsuit, and the military won the ability to continue to do their sonar tests, which in this exact area where all this activity is going on, I found kind of interesting.
Yeah. How about the Great Lakes? You got any cases from the Great Lakes? Those are pretty big bodies of water.
No, I don't personally have some, but I know that there are cases coming out of that area for sure. There's a whole lot of USO activity, which is only natural, like you said, with so much, you know, water around our planet.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to open up the phone lines in the last hour tonight, so maybe if there are audience members who've had cases or incidents, things that they have seen in or out bodies of water, maybe they can call in and share some stories with you and help you work on this book, Preston.
Yeah, I'd particularly like to know what's going on in this one particular area, but I know it's going on all over the place.
Tell me this, what's the attitude of ufologists when you tell them you're a usologist or whatever? Are you getting help from other researchers in general?
Oh, yeah. You know, people tell me about all kinds of cases, you know, that are related to the research I'm doing. Absolutely. Other UFO investigators have been very cooperative for the most part. And we all kind of collaborate, I think, on this mystery to try and figure out what's going on and try and get the attention particularly that it deserves. I consider it a very important subject. This is a subject that could change the world in a really profound way, and I think it is.
Well, tell me that. Expand on that. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's the whole UFO movement. They're not going away. I think this is something that has the potential to solve the energy crisis, the environmental crisis, and the economic crisis, because we're dealing with technology that I think we already have, UFO technology that, according to the accounts that, you know, I've gathered from just the UFO literature alone and from, you know, people I've interviewed firsthand, that we do have crashed UFOs. We have this energy, and that we don't need fossil fuels. And so we could have a huge change in a lot of different ways. This whole economic crisis is largely engineered, I think. And this is what I'm talking about. I mean, if we have this technology, it should be brought out. It's going to be brought out eventually. This is what we're trending towards. I think if this secret government, who does have control of this subject, wants to keep control, they're going to have to start, you know, being more forthcoming.
You've been at this for a while now. Do you have, I don't know if you can answer this. If you can't, I'll understand. But do you have any sort of whistleblowers, insiders who have offered to share information with you, stuff that has not been made public before, to tell you that you're on the right path and that they're going to help you out? Because I happen to believe that the Navy does know a heck of a lot more than they've let on, and that there's a whole big storeroom of information somewhere on USOs. But have you developed any sources like that, or can you say?
Well, not in a huge way. I certainly do get contacted by pretty impressive, people with pretty impressive credentials now and then, and they do recontact me, and I do encourage them now and then. I did once get a call very early on in my UFO research where I was actually threatened by one of these guys, who first listed all his credentials about how he was in the Vietnam War and had a top secret clearance, and then kind of turned on me and saying, I was barking up the wrong tree researching UFOs, that it was dangerous and I didn't know what I was getting into and probably wasn't ever going to find any pay dirt in it, and so on. I've talked to a lot of different people, and don't have any like huge inside secret government sources. Every now and then I do hear people from the military for sure though.
Have you, what do you say when people say, well, it's just eyewitnesses, you can't count on that, that's not evidence? I mean, is there, A, do you think eyewitness does count as evidence? And then B, is there any other evidence to support it? Sonar records, photographs, video? You got anything that could substantiate any of these cases that you're talking about?
Well, of course, eyewitness testimony is evidence. To ignore eyewitness testimony would be, cause all society to fall apart. And we're based on trusting each other to a large extent when someone makes a claim and puts their name behind it. And of course, when you're interviewing someone, it's best if you can, they're not alone and they have witnesses to corroborate their story. And this is almost always the case with UFO sightings. Usually people are not alone. The average sighting does not involve one person, but usually two, three, or four. So this definitely helps, corroborate someone's sighting. But as far as physical evidence, no, there's not a lot of it. And it's maddening. I do know that the government knows what's going on in this area. There was a case involving a professor who was woken up watching helicopters looking. This was in the Topanga Canyon area. Helicopters sending down these searchlights looking for something, and he sees this mirror bright silver flying saucer come scooting down the canyon, heading towards the ocean there. And clearly, these helicopters are looking for it, and it's evading them. They know what's going on. There was another case where there was a lady who was having all different kinds of contact, and I asked to interview her, and she was very upset. No, she did not want anyone to know about her case, and was very upset that I'd found out about it through, another UFO witness. And it turned out she was being surveilled by the government because she was having many different encounters with different types of ETs.
Like who? Who in the government was through it? Who was that?
I was never able to get a whole lot of information on this case, but it was one of several cases where, apparently the government is monitoring what's going on in this particular area.
Preston Dennett is my guest. We've been talking about USOs. When we come back, we're going to expand it to UFOs, some of the cases in California, Nevada, New York, all over the country, and get into some specifics, including the Ronald Reagan sightings.